Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
Well, Jake, that was a lot of star power on one show. It's not just hype. Pat McAfee would have been a fun surprise. He's, you know, endeared himself to wrestling fans, some wrestling fans, as the enthusiastic host of SmackDown for a while. And then The Rock shows up, happened to be in the area. And then we had the advertised appearance of John Cena on the Grayson Waller Effect. We had Judgment Day over from Raw. Packed show. The Rock appearance, certainly the headline maker, just in the sense that it wasn't expected. And Rock's comments earlier today saying he was once locked in to be Roman's opponent at WrestleMania 39, which was news to some people in WWE, I'm told, is getting headlines and got him back in the conversation. What'd you think of Rock's appearance on SmackDown tonight?
I guess the first thing that popped into my head is he must know this strike is going to carry on for a long time if he's going back to WWE. But
when Cena and Rock smiled and hugged, I was like, they're just smiling because they got a fallback plan because they're not part. WWE's not part of thing.
Yeah, if Batista shows up next week, that thing's going to carry on for like a year and a half or something. But the, I mean, it was you know, big appearance. I mean, watching The Rock on, you know, Pat McAfee's ESPN show earlier today was a bit surreal in a way, because I never know. You know, it always seems like Dwayne is working to an extent. You know, I don't know what he's saying that's the truth and what's fiction. You know, he insisted up and down that his Black Adam movie made money, even though, you know, nobody else could verify his figures. And so when he says he's locked in to be Roman Reigns' opponent at WrestleMania 39, and, you know, it just didn't quite come together. I, you know, maybe that was something he thought at one point and didn't communicate to anybody else, because it sure didn't seem like that was what WWE thought, at least at the, you know, at that time. But it's always fun to see him. He's an electric performer. He has the crowds in the palm of his hand. All that was on display tonight. The social media reaction was huge. The reaction in the building was gigantic. So, you know, anytime they can get access to him, it's huge to bring him in.
Yeah. I mean, Rock is a mega star on so many different levels, but the wrestling ring still feels like home to him. Certainly if he's doing it every week, he'd be, you know, more polished, but I didn't think he looked like a guy from the past who lost his fastball. He was having fun out there. And frankly, Austin Theory, I thought did a nice job opposite of him. And I mean, I know he took a couple people's elbows and was laid flat on his back, but I think, you know, being chosen to stand opposite of The Rock, not that there were a ton of choices to be in that role, but, you know, it's another moment for Austin Theory, who also had the moment that he brags incessantly about, which is beating John Cena after a low blow. What'd you think of Austin Theory's being chosen and the job that he did in that situation?
I think he was the right guy for the job, in the sense that he got a predictable reaction, and he's sort of a buffoonish heel who you would expect, you know, not to understand how deep the water he was standing in was at any given moment. And so I think it worked, and his performance was, you know, was fine. It was, you know, he more than lived up to the occasion, and you know, he doesn't lose anything by taking people's elbows from guest stars, and he'll be right back out there getting booed next week. I think it was good for what it was.
Rock didn't say anything storyline wise about the bloodline. Is that worth commenting on, reading into? Does it seem weird, or is it better to save that if it's going to become something, as opposed to this, which felt very, very much like a self-contained, special, unadvertised, fun moment for SmackDown and Rock and WWE fans?
Yeah, I think it was meant to be self-contained. I would think that if he's going to be involved in the Bloodline story, he's just got to show up to confront Roman Reigns. I mean, you know, if he shows up and confronts Paul Heyman, it'd make for a fun promo, but it's not nearly as grand of a situation as it would be if he confronted Roman. And if you just have him run into the people involved in that storyline backstage when Roman isn't there on some random episode of SmackDown without an advertised appearance, I think you have to sort of start answering some of the questions that people are asking about. Like, why has he never been mentioned as a part of this family on television? Why has he not cared about his family imploding on WWE television for the better part of 3 years? You know, I think they'd just rather, you know, leave those questions unanswered until they're ready to tell a full-fledged story with The Rock.
Do we know that there isn't, that do we know that there's camaraderie with Roman and Rock at this stage? Like, I haven't heard of a lot going on between the two of them, but maybe I'm forgetting something.
No, I mean, other than, you know, Roman making an appearance in that Hobbs and Shaw movie a couple of years ago, several years ago now, yeah. I can't think of any public interaction between the two that I can recall.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's just part of me that's like, well, I mean, are they just sort of, yeah, they're family, but are they actually like wanting to work together? And I just don't know. I guess it's worth asking around a little bit because, yeah, I mean, again, you don't want to hint at a big mega match on TV that's not going to happen, but he talked about it earlier in the day, and he knows it's going to, you know, make headlines. So it's not like he's trying to avoid the topic altogether. So just, yeah, I mean, but it was fun to be self-contained. Frankly, if Rock and Roman are best friends and super eager to have a match against each other, this is probably the best way to go about it, not introduce it yet. But, yeah, I mean, I guess there's just little, I will say I've had little indications here and there that it might not be, everyone might not be on the same page. And I don't know how, what Rock said today is going to go over with everybody, but obviously.
Well, I mean, there's been a lot of rumors about, you know, the way that Rock has structured his movie contracts, you know, like famously he and Vin Diesel had conflicts over the Fast and Furious films because The Rock did not want to physically lose a fight on film to anybody.
Yes.
And so the idea that, you know, that he would come in and just do the clean job to Roman Reigns might have some sticking points, you know, like, so I don't know where they're at with that conversation.
Yeah. I mean, I think you might be onto something. I'll just say that. I mean, I don't know, but I mean, I think you might be onto something. Aaron should be, you know, kind of weird, but you know, whatever. I mean, Rock's been very successful, and is, I mean, even when I interviewed him back in 99 or 2000, I mean, he, you know, like off at, like before we started the interview formally, he was like, you know, if I stumble or stammer, please edit it out. Like, he was very concerned about like his public image in every way, 'cause it was an interview to be transcribed. And, you know, and that's his reputation. He's very much, you know, perfectionist and very image conscious and all that. And I could imagine him being somebody who would be, I don't want to say he'd come in and act like a big shot, but he would come in and have his way that he wants things done and not imagine anyone would say anything about it and just go with it because he's The Rock. And, you know, I think there's other people in WWE who think they're going to be just fine without him the way business is going. So, yeah, but what I was going to say is no one's going to say no to Rock making an appearance with Pat McAfee and doing an angle with Austin Theory. The timing of it, you know, the week that the WWE ownership shift got finalized, could be coincidental, could be not, might have, like you said, more to do with a strike and the proximity of everybody being there. Maybe we'll learn more in coming days in terms of how this all came together, but it's making headlines. And, you know, another thing is SmackDown, more weeks than not in the last month and a half has been under 2.1 million viewers, and this should lead to some sort of a spike. Now, it was not advertised ahead of time, but the whole segment lasted, what, roughly 20 minutes? So there was time for people to hear about it and then tune in and see the second half of it, for instance. And so my hunch is that'll make a big enough difference, especially with Cena at the end of the show, where this will be, you know, a show that does very strong numbers. I think they did a good job throughout the show plugging Cena on the Grayson Waller effect. But, yeah, 3 out of the last 5 weeks, they've been under 2.1 million viewers. So, you know, they want to turn that around and get things back up in the, you know, 2.3, 2.4 range where they had been pretty consistent. Actually, 2.5 wasn't uncommon either this summer. So, so we'd like to hear from our listeners what they thought of Rock's appearance, what you think of the possibility of a Rock-Roman match, maybe next year, maybe not. I mean, Cody probably has something to say about that behind the scenes, and the fan base might too. Let's pause and informally introduce ourselves first here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, September 15th, 2023. We're talking SmackDown just a few minutes after the show went off the air here live at WadeKellerPostShow.com. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter. I've been covering professional wrestling as my job for 35 years, and it started in high school. And now I'm not only hosting podcasts, but still publishing the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and publishing news stories and other stuff on our main website, pwtorch.com. Hope you're checking that out every single day. We certainly update it throughout the day every day, so check it out if you haven't made a habit of that. And yeah, we do our podcasts and our post shows too, so search Wade Keller in your podcast app and subscribe to both the Red Logo Show and the Blue Logo Show. They're both free. The Red one is our post shows following Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision, and the Blue Logo Show is our main podcast feed, not the live call-in format we do, but the kind of the regular standard podcast, where we cover big topics. Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net was my co-host, as he is every 3 weeks on the flagship earlier this week. We also published some great interviews, big-name interviews, just really fascinating insights into the wrestling business on a regular basis, too, on our Blue Logo feed. But we're here to talk SmackDown, and the other voice you hear on the show is Jake Barnett, also from ProWrestling.net. Jake, welcome. Good to have you back in the co-host chair.
Thanks, Wade. Always a pleasure.
We want to hear from you if you're listening to our show live. If you're not, thank you for downloading and streaming the show. But if you are listening live here just past 10 Eastern, or we probably should say just past 8 Mountain Time because they're in Denver tonight, we'd like to hear from you. Our phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad if you want to be part of the show. So again, that's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad to be part of the show. We are hoping to hear from Chris, an on-site correspondent who is in the building tonight. So we'll be on the lookout for him once he gets out of the show. But in the meantime, we'd like to hear from you. Another way that you can participate in the show is email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, let's shift to our first caller of the show, Steve from Baltimore. Steve, good to hear from you. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight about SmackDown?
Hey, how's it going, Wade? I thought it was obviously a star-studded show. One thing I noticed, did you guys notice that we saw the cameramen a lot more tonight? Like, one even was blocking The Rock from going to a spot. Did they start using Endeavor cameraman tonight?
I doubt they changed camera crews, but you're thinking because of the ownership change. Maybe did they lay off any camera people tonight, Jake, or earlier today, and all their corporate layoffs?
I only saw the high-profile ones. I'm not sure. I'm sure there were a number of rank-and-file employees that ended up getting let go, but no production people that I saw.
Yeah, I didn't either. I didn't notice much in that way. What stood out to me is when Rock was doing the this half of the building chant this, the other half chant this, the director awkwardly only showed the opposite hard cam view. So we never saw the fans doing the second half of the chant because that's the hard cam view, which is not camera-friendly because you got this big area tarped off. It's often not full. I didn't look up what the attendance was tonight. Maybe we'll hear from our on-site correspondent about that. But it just felt weird that they never went to kind of a wide enough shot that would show at least some fans in that section chanting that. So that maybe Rock was just, you know, maybe Rock needs to go to NXT, Jake, to learn about the hard cam. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it was pretty close to a sellout from what I saw, but I have no idea why they made those choices with the camera work there. I was more distracted by the fact that they censored about 90% of the audio for about 2 minutes on the show.
That was another thing, probably even more, you know, a bigger deal than the camera angle, which probably not too many people, you know, were thinking about. But yeah, they because of the asshole chant, they can't hear that on Fox, and so much got bleeped. There were times where they were pausing, you know, which, you know, where they didn't talk, but there are other times where they were talking, including the backstage segment where whatever they were saying got largely muted, which was a little bit awkward. Steve, back to you.
Yeah, Yeah, I didn't really think they started using it ever, but it seemed like they were just very much in the way tonight in ways you don't usually see cameramen in the shots. I haven't ever seen that before in WWE. But I also noted that The Rock didn't make any comments about Roman Reigns, and that, I think that you're right. It's not something that he's going to bring up until it's time. But the final segment with John Cena not talking, where do you think that Cena's immediate future lies?
Yeah, a lot of moving parts, Jake, with John Cena 2 weeks ago. You know, I was asking around, like, you know, what's John Cena going to do when he comes back? Who's his opponent going to be? And Jimmy Uso came out. It's been a weird, you know, month for Jimmy Uso. You know, Jay, I don't want you to become like Roman. And then, like, suddenly Jimmy's like, I want to be back under the auspices of Roman. I don't quite get what's going on with his character other than Jimmy seems to be the choice to be a John Cena opponent. But you got AJ Styles in the mix. You got Judgment Day at ringside. You've got both Jay and Jimmy being recruited. You've got Roman on, at least on cell phone with Paul Heyman. You got Solo Sikoa going into business for himself, which the Tribal Chief may not approve of. Certainly Heyman is distressed over it. There's so many moving parts, and heck, even, you know, I mean, the Lashley and the Street Profits are kind of doing their own thing, but they're a formidable faction. But as far as Cena goes, I mean, it seems like, you know, Jimmy Uso's up first. Where do you think this is all playing out, and what do you think about the way they're telling the story right now, Jake? Does it feel master planned, or are they winging it?
It feels more like they're winging it than any other period in the Bloodline saga so far, at least, you know, to my amateur analysis opinion. But I think the immediate issue seems to be, you know, Solo and Jimmy, you know, not waiting for orders from Roman before acting on the issues that the Bloodline are having with John Cena, with Judgment Day, with AJ Styles and others. And that's what Paul Heyman seems to be really concerned about, is that, you know, nobody is consulting Roman, even in his absence, for what's going on. And so I assume, you know, at the next pay-per-view coming up in a few weeks, we'll see a tag match most likely. And then if Roman is set to return, you know, heading as they get closer to the show in Saudi Arabia or Survivor Series, then he can start to address, you know, what's been going on in his absence and sort of pick back up with the meat of the Bloodline story. A lot of this just sort of feels like they're filling time, if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Steve, anything else you want to bring up?
When we finally get the U.S. title match, do you think the LWO remains intact afterwards, or are we going to see one of those guys turn on the other?
I thought they did a nice job with Ray going, oh, after all I've been through, you want a title match, and looking like he was offended by it, only to reveal he's not at all offended by it, and Santos Escobar just being like, ah, you got me there. The hints of dissension in a breakup have been either subtle and intentional or unintentional, and we're just reading into them. Jake, what do you think the timing of this is going to be in terms of it playing out?
I would think we see this play out over the next few months. You know, whatever is going on with the LWO, I mean, they may accelerate the story and you know, kind of pay it off immediately at the next show. But I'm guessing maybe Survivor Series may be the target. But I am thinking we're going to see Santos Escobar, you know, lose that first match, and then, you know, his frustration boils over and we eventually see a heel turn. But I'm not anticipating it happening, you know, in the immediate short term.
And Escobar was still recently a heel, Legado del Fantasma as a group was, that you'd want them to be solidified as being cheered and being babyfaces for a while before you turn them. Otherwise it makes Ray seem, I don't know. I mean, I think they've done a good job building up what feels like genuine camaraderie and chemistry with Escobar and Ray, but you don't want the turn to happen so fast that Ray seems like he was naive because of his choice to ignore what Legado del Fantasma were like before, you know, they started working together. So to me, the longer they go, the better to a degree. So it seems like it has a chance to kind of solidify the idea that because everyone's just waiting around at first for Escobar to turn. And now I think that subsided quite a bit with a casual viewer. They're like, no, this just seems like a genuine, you know, connection that these people have. And you want to get to that stage before Escobar turns. So they're kind of there. Now you just want to play it out in a sensible way for, like you said, Jake, maybe a couple months before it happens. And, yeah, if Escobar comes up short, there's room for – hopefully we don't get the overblown coincidental miscue that leads to tension. Hopefully they come up with something better than that. But, yeah, so far, I mean, I think it's felt earnest and well done overall. Steve, anything else for us?
With the Judgment Day recruiting both Uso brothers, do you think we're potentially setting up Survivor Series match with them against the Bloodline?
Yeah, I mean, the announcers keep saying, we don't know how this all shakes out. What does this all mean? As they showed the video clips of all the moving parts last week and then again this week. Jake, what does this look like it's shaping up to be?
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Jimmy and Jey Uso on opposite ends of a Survivor Series match, you know, whether that's War Games or something else. I mean, that seems like a destination that you could plan out from here. Whether, you know, they're still recruiting Jey Uso for Judgment Day or he reluctantly agrees to take part in the match to get back at his, you know, his Bloodline, you know, family is another thing entirely. I guess I don't, you know, really know what the long-term plan is for Jey right now. We've only had a sort of a couple of weeks in this experiment over on Raw to really kind of get a feel for where he's going. But yeah, I would think that may be part of that, you know, destination, but I can't say that for certain. There's also, you know, enough evidence that you could say that, you know, there could be some sort of temporary alliance happening between Judgment Day and the Bloodline in the short term too.
Yeah, I mean, if Jimmy and or Jey align with Judgment Day on even a temporary trial basis, and then you end up, I'm trying to think of, like, you know, how big the team, you know, who all would participate, but if you, because Roman wouldn't necessarily have to be in the match for it to work. In a way, it might work better if it's, you know, Solo and the Usos and Priest and Balor and or Dom teaming up, and then, you know, you tell the storyline of, you know, who is Solo, you know, who's Solo. Is Solo going to be someone who can work with anyone else, even the Usos for that matter? And do Jimmy and Jey coexist? I mean, there's, again, we talk about, it sounds like redundant to say so many moving parts, but really there would be going into a situation like that with Judgment Day trying to recruit the Usos, but, you know, Jey being very divorced from Bloodline, but not necessarily Judgment Day, and Jimmy being courted also by Judgment Day. Yeah, I mean, it just could go so many different directions. So hopefully they're not winging it in a way where it won't make sense. But I think there's a lot that they can play with here, Steve, that can fill TV time and culminate in a big match, again, perhaps at Survivor Series, which is certainly circled. And, you know, Roman's likely wrestling at the reportedly wrestling at the next Saudi Arabia event, too. Steve, what else for us?
That's all I had tonight. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks for calling, Steve. Good to hear from you. So, you know, any thoughts on Roman, Jake, wrestling on the November 4th event in Saudi Arabia?
I'm assuming, you know, just given the nature of those shows and how much money they bring in for WWE and the fact that they typically try to have as much star power as possible present on those shows, I'd be surprised if Roman wasn't there. And what capacity he's working in, I'm not quite sure. You know, they seem to be sort of hinting at the possibility that LA Knight could be a challenger.
Yeah.
And so maybe the Saudi show is a good place for that. I don't really know.
LA Knight could earn more money in one night working that match than he's earned in any 2-year period, probably in his entire career leading up to that moment. It wouldn't shock me. You know, I mean, the paydays for those events are pretty good. Although who knows how TKO and Endeavor change that if they, you know, who knows? I mean, there's so many question marks as far as that goes.
I think that WWE is probably still locked into that deal for several years. Now, whether or not TKO would choose to renew it is another thing altogether.
Yeah. I was thinking more along the lines of how does the money get distributed to wrestlers? You know, do they change the distribution of money? You know, to that, you're paying these people that much. What leverage do they have where we have to pay them that much? Let's slice that in half and make more money. Who knows how they approach things, but certainly, you know, their track record, Endeavor's track record, with Saudi Arabia is more encouraging. But, you know, when UFC got purchased, fighters didn't benefit in many ways. As Todd Martin, who covers MMA along with pro wrestling, has gotten into on his VIP show, The Fix, in recent weeks. Okay, our phone number is 347-215-8558. Give us a call and push 1 on your keypad if you're interested in being part of the conversation tonight. I want to go to another topic on or another email on Rock here. This is Zach in Texas who said, "Gentlemen, I certainly didn't expect to see on Twitter that Rock was back. After watching," so there's someone who was heard on Twitter and tuned in. "After watching the segment, I got to say I enjoyed it. I always love The Rock roasting someone, and I don't really care for Austin Theory anyway. That said, I still see two major problems with his appearance. First, extreme part-timers like The Rock and John Cena coming back and not being invested in having an actual meaningful run, even a short one, ultimately does nothing for the current talent because they wind up just being hapless foils. Secondly, after his interview today and his appearance tonight, it feels like The Rock versus Roman at Mania is a strong possibility. Does that mean Cody Rhodes is SOL on finishing the story? And Roman would still be champion coming out of Mania? Which would be ridiculous at this point. Rock's return felt good in the moment, but could be a long-term problem." Yeah, I mean, of course, I don't think Rock Reigns is the most likely scenario for next year's WrestleMania. And my guess is that Rock did this without any consultation with WWE. And there might even be consternation, you know, like, oh, Rock's putting his name out there, and now people are going to want that, but we have plans for Cody. But again, I'm leaving open the possibility because this is all fresh today and I haven't checked around enough. Maybe WWE is definitely super excited about this and like, screw Cody, we got The Rock. But I just haven't sensed that. I didn't sense that, you know, last year leading into Mania, that they were, you know, lamenting not having The Rock. I think they like how Cody has worked out, and getting to Zach's point, I think they like full-time people being in that situation. And you know, Cody's someone that they can count on for what TKO and Endeavor have said they want to do more of, which is expand the live event schedule also. Cody's going to be there. Rock isn't. As Zach says, Rock and Cena aren't going to be. What do you think about that, Jake? The pros and cons of going with Cody versus The Rock, given the totality of where WWE is right now and how popular Cody is.
Well, if I'm Cody, I'm probably actively trying to negotiate the end to the writers and SAG strike I know anybody who can get me on the phone. But I guess if I were in WWE's position and I had already recorded record ticket sales at extremely high ticket prices for WrestleMania in Philadelphia without anybody advertised for the show, I wouldn't think I was in a position where I absolutely needed to cave into whatever The Rock's demands are to put him on that show. You know, is it great if he could work the show? Certainly. I mean, it's, you know, a Rock appearance is certainly better than not having him there. But I don't know if I would shove aside all of my long-term plans in order to make it happen either. You know, I think the company is doing very good business right now. And, you know, The Rock making surprise appearances and popping ratings and drawing attention to the company is all good. But, you know, I think they have higher aspirations for some of their full-time talent at this point than to shove them all aside to book celebrities at WrestleMania. And I could be wrong, but unless it just falls into their lap and, you know, The Rock is willing to do what they want him to do and all those things, I wouldn't shove aside Cody if they actually think that he could be a long-term star for the company going forward several years.
Yeah. Yep. I'm nodding along as you talk there, Jake. I wouldn't blow things up for him, but I mean, it's going to be big either way for business, whichever approach they take. But yeah, Cody might be definitely trying to get the writer's strike settled. Maybe he can be the hero that brings the two sides together. All right, Azan emails and says, "Good evening, Wade and Jake. Tonight's SmackDown felt right out of the golden era of 2002. First question, first comment, as I watched the LWO promo tonight, I wondered what if Ray turned heel instead of Santos? You could have a storyline where Ray is jealous of the younger guy taking his place. What do you think about that idea? Hey, Ray and Dominic could team up again then as heels. Ray could admit that he was an absentee father, and Dom was right all along too.
Yeah, if the end of the if the outcome is that Ray admits he was a dirtbag the entire time, that would be the most hilarious possible timeline to exist in. But I think Santos is just a much more effective heel than he is a babyface, if I'm being honest. And he appeared on the main roster as a heel when he first showed up, and they just never really pushed him. And so I'm kind of hoping they wheel back around to that eventually and they really give him a consistent push as a heel. Cause not only is he, you know, a strong worker, but he's articulate and can deliver on the microphone as well. And so I think he's sort of custom made to be that level of a heel for them in that portion of the mid card where I think he would thrive at least at first. And so I really don't see them completely upsetting the apple cart and turning Ray heel, you know, a legend who has spent basically his entire career as a babyface now, especially because he's still, you know, I mean, as much as Ray has improved, I think Santos might still be better on the microphone. And so I think he would be the one carrying that feud if and when it happens. And so I'd rather have Santos being the heel at that point than Ray.
I would too, for sure. And I just think it's too late in Ray's career for him to, you know, go be a heel. It's like, no one's going to buy that he's a bad guy. And, you know, just like they weren't buying that Edge was a bad guy. It would just seem like he's playing a role, you know, as a performance. And that's not what fans want. Plus, Ray is just, I mean, people, there's still kids and adults, but who just buy tickets just to see Ray. And you just don't mess with that, especially because, as you point out, Escobar is just a better heel. He also says wrestling pundits and journalists underestimate Pretty Deadly's ability to be a real money draw for WWE in the near future. I get it. They're a comedy act, but so was Sami Zayn just a few short years ago. The work they've done in NXT shows they are capable of working with anyone. Well, I don't know who he's listening to or referring to as in generic wrestling pundits and journalists, but I think Pretty Deadly are super talented, and I would not say that they are just. Yeah, I don't think that they're just going to be lower card comedy acts. I think there's more talent there. There's a possibility that, you know, they get kind of defined in a certain way that limits them, but there's enough talent in the ring, and I just think they kind of leap off the screen in terms of being a memorable act. They're bombastic, but they're credible enough in the ring to not just seem like they're going to be the Matt Menard and Angelo Parker of WWE. Jake, where are you on them?
I'm really high on Pretty Deadly. I think they, you know, they have a high ceiling. There is that typecasting risk of sorts to where they're fun and they're, you know, they're sort of obnoxious and bombastic, as you said, and you can get sort of shoveled into a role to where people never really take you seriously as a result of something like that. And so maybe there's a little wrinkle that they can add to their act that would push through that. Maybe like a, you know, most of the time they're when they're cool and collected, they're, you know, they kind of maintain this friendly exterior, but there's also sort of a viciousness about them when they're close to achieving one of their goals. You know, I think they're just missing a little bit of that additional characterization that makes them feel a bit more three-dimensional than they do now.
Yep. Zahn also says, my final point of the night was with major star power on SmackDown, the lack of Cameron Grimes and Karrion Kross. Do you think it'd be best for WWE to send those two back down to NXT like they're doing with Butch and Mustafa Ali right now? I mean, if you have a chance to have Rock and Cena on your show, even if there's some negatives, even as Zach pointed out, you do it. You don't put Cameron Grimes and Karrion Kross, of all people, on other place or lament that they're not there. But there are, he's not wrong, there are some people who get pushed off the show when somebody like Rock and when Cena becomes available. What do you think specifically about Cameron and Kross, but even more broadly about where we are now with the pros and cons of Rock and Cena getting the TV time they're getting? Obviously, Rock sharing time with Theory, Cena sharing screen time with Grayson and with Jimmy. It's not like they're just in some self-contained bubble eating up TV time. They are, in a sense, in theory at least, giving a rub to the people that they're sharing screen time with.
Yeah, I think they're doing everything within their power to keep the momentum. There's quite a bit of positive momentum for WWE publicly right now. Their attendance is way up. At least up until very recently, their ratings were very strong. They're in the midst of television negotiations. I think they're going to use every possible, trick that they can pull out of their bag to try and, continue to give the impression that they are an incredibly hot brand and a destination for people to watch. And if that means, moving Karrion Kross and Cameron Grimes, two relatively ineffective television characters, off screen for a couple weeks, I don't think they're going to think twice about stuff like that.
Yeah. Yep. Agree. All right. Jake, the interaction with Cena and Grayson, is that, to me, Grayson Waller right now has cemented himself pretty quickly as a really good talker who can do a really good version of a talk show. Is he getting a rub that can lead to something other than him being like a mid-card talk show guy? He is a little bit older. Well, he's, a handful of years older than Austin Theory. And ring work wise, he's okay, but it's not like, oh, just wait till you see him get in the ring. It's not like that kind of thing. What is his trajectory right now? And is it a really good trajectory for him, or is it a little off a more ideal course?
I mean, I guess until, he can really go out there and have convincing main event style WWE matches, I'm guessing, the mid card is where he'll stay. But I don't think that's necessarily a bad place to be. I think he's got enough talent, especially on the microphone with the talk show. And the more comfortable he gets there and the more effective he gets there, the greater his chances are of breaking through to that next level. But I think he's a guy who's at least proven that he can carry segments and not look out of place with big stars. And that's enough to keep you employed and working in WWE for a long time. And I think you'd have to call that a success.
Yeah. Yeah. Year or two from now, is Waller like a top six, or I should say like a top six star, and people talk about him being in pay-per-view main events, or is he more of a top of the second tier level guy?
I see him being at the top of that second tier, but I wouldn't completely rule out him having runs, in that top tier if he becomes a lot more effective on the microphone. I think he's grown, pretty dramatically since the draft. Those first two or three episodes of the Grayson Waller Effect were pretty bland. And I think he's cut loose a little bit, started leaning more into his heel persona, injecting more of that into the talk show. And it's become a better watch as a result of it. And so as long as he continues on that trajectory, I think he'll be able to talk himself into feuds, that are further up the card than you might expect not too long from now.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to go back to LA Knight and the possibility of him, because, Azan's bringing up, are some of the wrestlers getting pushed off the page? Cameron Grimes, I think his push has been a bit of a mess and lack direction. Karrion Kross is not someone that I think you worry too much about for a variety of reasons in terms of whether, he's a utility guy if you need him, but no big deal. But LA Knight's super mega over. He has his obligatory one botched move per match. That happened again today as he's flipping out of a Miz move, and he's supposed to land on his feet, and he just fell on his face and shoulder, and Cole's like, good thing he didn't get hurt there. But that's not a reason not to try to get something out of him. Is LA Knight against Roman Reigns the right thing to do, and is Saudi Arabia the right place for it? Or is that sort of just, I assume if that happens, Reigns just wins, and then you've given fans what they're longing for, what they're craving, but it's over almost before it starts, and then suddenly you got to move on to other things. But you can make the argument that's the right thing to do because you don't want LA Knight to be to Cody what Daniel Bryan was to Batista either. You just want to give fans what they want and then kind of have closure and move on at the beginning of next year with building Cody Reigns.
Yeah, I guess I've kind of been tempering my expectations for LA Knight for a while now, and so maybe I'm not as convinced that he's the next big thing as a lot of people are. He's he's kind of one note, and his matches are not technical masterpieces in any way, shape, or form. And so I've just never seen him as a guy that WWE is going to hand the ball and let him try to carry the company. You know, he's getting fantastic reactions. People love his shtick. I just don't know what the expiration date is on those kinds of reactions, because, you know, people do tend to wear that stuff out after a time. Now, you know, could I be wrong, and could, you know, he stick around and be at the top for years to come? Yeah, of course. I mean, there's always that possibility. But I think if they have plans to do bigger things at WrestleMania, and they want to avoid, you know, some kind of LA Knight revolt coming out of the Royal Rumble or something, then give him the shot at Survivor Series, or give him the shot at in Saudi Arabia, or whatever they plan on doing, because that would at least, you know, give people a sense that LA Knight has gone on a journey and done something.
What have you thought of LA Knight over the years, and relative to now, what's happening with him? Did you always think in the back of your mind this could be, you know, he'd be? I always thought he'd be a good fit for WWE. Thought he'd be, you know, a Miz, Grayson Waller. I'm trying to think who else. Austin Theory type. You know, a guy who comes in, a lot of bombast with his mouth, not great in the ring. Everybody had listed as different ring aptitude, but they're not known for that. You know, it's not a Will Ospreay or, you know, Pac type situation where it's like, well, you know, if they can talk, that's a bonus. What have you thought of LA Knight over the years as Eli, you know, going back to the Eli Drake days?
I've kind of thought similar things. You know, I've never thought he was, you know, a great technical worker, but I've always enjoyed his work on the microphone. I think he's a strong personality. He always felt like he would be a good fit in WWE, where your personality can carry you a lot farther than it might in other promotions that really depend on strong matches and work rate to carry the show. And so I think he's in the right place. You know, it's just a matter of, will, you know, the company see him as a guy who can carry the, you know, one of their television brands for, you know, for a short time, or you know, even long term. And I don't have the answer to that. You know, it also sounds like he's sort of in the midst of contentious contract negotiations, and that may complicate things as well. So I really don't know what the end game is for LA Knight. I like him as a character, but he just never rang to me as a guy who would stay on the top for long periods of time. I think he's, you know, he's another one of those top of the second tier, occasionally cracking into the main event picture kind of guys.
Yep. I'm with you on all of that, Okay. We mentioned earlier, Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits. Did it seem to you they were hedging on whether they're going to be heels in recent weeks because of the crowd response? And did that get answered tonight that they're definitely heels?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the right call. They, you know, Lashley and the Profits being menacing heels is more interesting than having another babyface faction running around on SmackDown. You know, the Club are kind of babyfaces, I guess. You got the Brawling Brutes and Sheamus, they're a babyface faction. You got the LWO currently aligned as a babyface faction. And so I think the Profits and Bobby ending up as heels is probably the right call. You know, and you know, they have a lot of factions going on in WWE, and they're even starting to acknowledge, you know, the struggles going on between all of them. You know, the LWO, Brawling Brutes, the Club, Lashley and the Profits, Judgment Day, the Bloodline. You know, it's almost AEW-like in its proliferation at this point.
Yes, yes. Should the Profits tone down, especially Montez Ford, the way that he's presented himself, and have people go, I can't believe this is the same guy? Or should he dial it up and just lean into it being obnoxious and grating and, you know, tweak it a bit so that's the persona he has? What do you think is a better approach for what now seems like a solid direction? You know, I know Bobby's going to get cheered in Colorado especially, but in general, you know, you go opposite, you badmouth baby faces, that means you're meant to be booed. How should this... And frankly, should Bobby change the way he does things too? He's not going to not dress perfectly. I mean, you know, dress at a high level because that's him. But are there things that the Profits and Lashley should be doing to try to get booed and to solidify that this is sort of a new era, especially for the Profits?
I think they're just sort of slowly getting to what their landing place is with them, that they probably should stop smiling and hyping up the crowd as much as they do. Stop going for the high spots in the ring. I know that they use them as a part of their tag team arsenal, and some of that's unavoidable. But they certainly go for some of the same high spots that they used as baby faces, and so maybe they should work some of that out of their act and try to find new ways to get some heat. Take shortcuts. All the typical heel tactics would apply here. And I think with Bobby, he's always as a heel. Or a babyface, he always, has a tendency to smile during promos, even when he doesn't intend to. And yeah. So if he could sort of work that tick out of his system, that would be ideal as well. But I think they're going to be taken seriously either way. They carry themselves well. It's just maybe some of the, cutting out some of those mannerisms that they used as babyfaces would go a long ways.
By the way, we don't have anyone holding. So if you want to be on the show, call or push one. We'd love to hear from you. Get your thoughts on Rock, Cena, or WrestleMania next year. Do you want to see Reigns? Do you want to see Cody? Any of that stuff. 347-215-8558 is the number. And then push one, and you can be on the show. Or you can email us, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. We're still hoping to hear from Chris on site tonight in Denver. But in the meantime, I want to shift to the women's division, Jake. Asuka and Bayley tonight, not a ton to the match. It was, it was a backdrop to hype Io Sky and Asuka next week, and also a vehicle to elevate the Bayley-Shotzi feud. First, what do you think of Asuka challenging Io Sky and the role that Asuka's in, leading all the way up to the fist bump with Shotzi that took so long, they almost cut away before they got to it because Asuka milked the moment so much. What do you think of the Sky Asuka title match being used as a way to have a serviceable main event on SmackDown, because they're always trying to plan ahead and figure out what are we going to headline shows with? They got 52 SmackDowns a year to headline. Today they got away with a John Cena talk show segment. Next week might be the women's match, unless they put one, the Rey match or something else on top instead. Your thoughts on the women's angle on SmackDown?
I mean, it was kind of goofy. The match itself was just kind of there. I didn't really think it got out of second gear. It was fine for what it was, but it had the long commercial break in the middle of it, and I think it only ended up going like 8 or 9 minutes, and so it didn't end up being particularly long. But the Shotzi interference, you could kind of tell it was coming because the crowd popped as she walked to ringside, and then so you had the crowd popping and you weren't exactly sure why, and then Shotzi pops up like a jump scare moment on the outside to freak out Bayley, and that got a decent reaction. But then they kind of goofed up the finish with the with the backslide at the end, and Bayley kind of not being right into position for it, and so it kind of came across a bit awkwardly there. But I just, in terms of the overall angle, I'm not quite sure what they're doing with Shotzi, because she got the haircut, she changed up the persona a little bit, and then it seemed like she was doing, some kind of, I had a mental break, doing some kind of horror character, and now she's just sort of like the friendly horror movie villain. Like, it's very it's very strange, that she just gets along with other talent and is bumping fists with the baby faces and things like that, despite, going through what she did. And so I'm very confused by that. It doesn't really feel like her angle with Bayley is going anywhere. I guess the one bright spot is that I'm really looking forward to seeing what Io and Asuka can put together next week. I think they're two extremely quality talents in the ring. They haven't really had a chance to do anything on the microphone, and it doesn't seem like WWE is big on giving them mic time anyway, but hopefully they can put together a satisfactory, video package with some sit-down interviews or something before they get to the main event next week and have that match, because I think it deserves a little bit of promotion at least.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the match. I think Sky and Asuka are going to want to put on a good match. I don't know how much longer Asuka's going to want to be a full-time wrestler for WWE, and this, you know, might be a chance to have one more big match where they can put something special together in the ring. And obviously the pieces are in place with Asuka and Shotzi doing the fist bump for a tag match also to come out of this, besides, maybe after the title match. And that gets them another SmackDown main event before they get to Shotzi and Bayley one-on-one, because then Bayley can just be scared of Shotzi during the tag match too. So they can pace this in different ways. It's not the most, robust women's scene tonight on SmackDown, but they've got other things going in other areas, but at least they gave it some TV time in anticipation of the title match next week. Back to the top of the show. Pat McAfee was always scheduled to be on the show, by the way. The Rock thing was pretty recent addition. It sounds like Nick Khan, and he's tight with Rock, probably orchestrated that at the last second, but McAfee coming back, Michael Cole acts surprised. Sometimes maybe he is genuinely surprised by it. Where do you think McAfee is with the fan base? I talked, at the beginning of the show a little bit that he endeared himself to the fan base because he was so into the product and it seemed genuine. I think for the most part it is. I mean, there's a little embellishing and performative enthusiasm that probably kicked in, but it's also McAfee's personality. But do you like the idea of McAfee showing up every now and then, when they're in the area or for whatever reason? Or is it for you personally, not something you want to watch on TV when you've got a 2-hour wrestling show to watch McAfee talk for several minutes?
No, I think, special appearances are fine. Yeah. I guess he built up enough cachet with the wrestling audience, where people get excited when he makes a return. He got the same kind of reaction when he returned at the Royal Rumble. And so, I think it's fairly harmless. It's one of those things where it was, tonight it ended up being a setup for The Rock. And I don't know what it would have been had The Rock not been there. If we were talking about, 17-minute McAfee in theory talking segment, I might have a much different, response to it if that was the original plan. But, he seems to genuinely have a good time when he's out there, and that sort of joy is infectious in a way. They've managed to get a couple of his facial expressions and little dances he was doing during the Rock's promo and whatnot, and that was that was fun to watch. And so I generally enjoy McAfee's appearances, but I guess I wouldn't necessarily bring him in to do 15-20-minute promos by himself. That's for sure.
Yeah. I want to step away for a moment from SmackDown in particular, because it was a big story this week. My lead sentence in the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter cover story was Vince McMahon has a boss who's not his dad. First time he's had a boss since taking over WWF, 40 years ago. Did you notice anything tonight other than, maybe the Rock appearance wouldn't have happened, but I mean, they were going to be in Denver and McAfee and Rock might've done a podcast, maybe not. But anything different about the show? And do you expect anything different about the on-air product based on everything that has been said and that we've learned about how the new ownership structure is set up? Or do you think, in my reporting and others' reporting, is Paula Beck's in good standing, that the current power base, Ari Emanuel, Shapiro, Khan, they all like Paula Beck? I think there's more leeriness about McMahon, but, McMahon gets maligned for meddling because of the timing and how disruptive it is. And on occasion, some of his quirks booking-wise certainly work their way into the show when he's being more active. But I hear, a reasonably large percentage of the time also that when he looks at the final draft of things, his suggestions are good, that a fresh set of eyes on the script in the format helps sometimes. He asks good questions, and the suggestions he makes, people go, yeah, that makes sense. Let's switch that up, or let's not lean as hard into that, or let's take this person out of the segment or add this person into something. If that's the role he plays, I think he'd stay in a position of power. But if he goes, pushes things too far, or his scandals and legal issues get too big, he's now in less of a power position than ever, other than maybe for a short time after he resigned a little over a year ago, to have to be reined in And I'm fascinated by the possibility of that happening. And, you know, we're not going to get any public statements from Emmanuel or Shapiro or Khan or anything about, you know, well, now that Vince isn't the ultimate guy at the top, we're going to keep him in check, but they might keep him in check. I'm kind of, you know, hinting a few talking points from this week, but I want to get your thoughts on that, Jake, what you think about the ownership change and what fans and, you know, on the business side, people can expect. And we'll get into the layoffs in a moment.
Well, I don't think, you know, the Endeavor, Ari Emanuel team went into this situation with blinders on. You know, they know who Vince McMahon is. They know all of the machinations that went on in the background of WWE in, you know, the final months before, you know, Vince announced his intention to seek a sale. And so, you know, his legal issues, the fact that the previous WWE board did not think it was in the best interest of the company to bring him back in, you know, all of the, you know, the issues that happened around, you know, all of the women that he, you know, allegedly paid off, possibly for criminal behavior. You know, there's a lot of things surrounding Vince McMahon that are a black cloud, and none of them have materialized in a way that have had consequences for him or the company yet. But that doesn't mean that can't happen. And, you know, he pushed for this. He pushed his way back in to the company. He did not want to, you know, to leave the company in the control of Nick Khan and his daughter and Paul and the rest of that previous executive team. And so, you know, he's put himself into a position now where he is not the majority owner of this company, and nobody in his family has the authority to, you know, to override the other directors and management team. You know, he is now an employee of this company, and he'll have input, but he is not ultimately going to have the final say, and he won't have the ability to bully other people around in order to get his way. And I hope that means that he'll be a good citizen and, corporate citizen, I mean, and respect the decision making that goes on, because I think Ari Emanuel would absolutely have the power to push him off the board and remove him as an officer if he got out of control, which you know, is not out of the question. He's certainly been out of control in the past.
Yes. How do you feel about the you know, same week layoffs and cutbacks? You know, no corporation is obligated to continue to pay employees forever. I mean, that's just their business. They want to make money. If you are a value to them, they will keep you. If you aren't a value to them, they will let you go. That's the crass, but also sort of what you sign up for when you decide to work for someone instead of start your own business. You're at their mercy, and they're the ones who decide if you're worth keeping. When there's a merger of sorts, which has sort of happened here, there's going to be, you know, the UK term redundancies, where the feeling is we don't need two sets of people, you know, in a certain role. And this happens a lot when this kind of thing happens. When, what was it, AT&T and T-Mobile, are they the ones who merged? Whatever. You know, when mobile companies, they don't keep two corporate headquarters. They, you know, merge them and people get cut. So this isn't like outlandishly unusual is my point. But there's some names who have been really instrumental in building WWE into the company that had the value it had. And it, of course, it's going to feel distasteful, leave a sour taste in people's mouths, seem unfair or just unfortunate. And, you know, a lot of people looking for work in it. You know, WWE's loss might be AEW's gain. There might be some really smart, savvy people who can help AEW in areas of need. But happening just, you know, within the same week, just feels like, all right, we've just been itching to let a bunch of people go, because, boy, they did not take much time to do it. Jake, how do you feel about how this is being handled in terms of what has been reported so far?
I don't find any of it particularly shocking. You know, Endeavor, you know, I guess it's I'm trying to think of the, you know, the different names that it's taken over the years. You know, it's William Morris Endeavor, and then WMEIMG, and, you know, there's all kinds of names for the, you know, the different companies and subsidiaries that are a part of Ari Emanuel's big library of corporate entities, and he's got a lot of people that work for him doing different things. And if you've ever been a part of a merger, and I've been a part of several of them over my lifetime working in corporate America, they essentially mash these two org charts together. You know, WWE had all of its list of people working in different departments, and Endeavor, or you know, the former whatever company they put together for the former UFC, had its, you know, people in marketing and IT and human resources and accounting and you know, all these different portions of a business. And you know, all the people that were working in both companies are unfortunately, you know, no longer necessary. There's not enough work to keep everybody who is employed in every department in both companies there. And, you know, I've survived mergers. I got let go during a merger. It's just sort of part of the way that these businesses are done. And unfortunately, what Endeavor and WWE promised their investors when they merged these two companies together was, you know, one of the worst corporate buzzwords in the world is synergy. And that's what you end up with, is we will streamline our operations by, you know, keeping the best talents from both companies and, you know, putting them together under a single org chart so that we're leaner and meaner and we're, you know, all those, you know, buzzwords that they use in front of the stock market. And it's really just another word for saying we're going to cut as many costs as possible. And so I think people who were making a lot of money were probably high on the target list, unfortunately. You know, if you were with WWE for a really long time and you were collecting a big salary, and there was somebody at UFC who has been, you know, who was doing similar work but not taking as much pay, guess what? The person who's cheaper is probably going to be there, and vice versa. And so that's just the nature of these things. And it's terrible, and I feel awful for people who are losing their jobs. It's not something that, that, you know, it's a positive day in your life, but hopefully they'll all land on their feet and find other work. You know, it's just the way it works when corporate America decides to smash two companies together. It's not great.
Yes, absolutely. What do you fear? Maybe fear is overstating it, but what concerns do you have about what could happen with WWE with this merger being so closely affiliated with USC? Jason Paul and I talked earlier in the week about, well, maybe they start forcing UFC talent into WWE storylines or try to cross promote. Other people, I think, have a point that, you know, they're probably going to want to stay separate, and people know, you know, in both companies that They're gonna talk anyone out of it who thinks what a great idea it is, because, you know, UFC fans probably don't want to watch WWE in large numbers. A large percentage of UFC fans don't want their UFC fighters to be messing around with that fake stuff, and WWE fans don't want some interloper coming in and acting like a big shot when, you know, they think that Cody's a bigger deal than anybody in UFC. My thinking is we're not gonna get a lot of that, but I think it's a fair concern to have, a fair point to bring up, and there frankly might be times where it makes sense, but it should certainly be rare and few and far between, in my opinion, when it just everybody agrees it's better. So you can talk about that or anything else that you think might be a concern based on what could happen from a wrestling fan perspective, what affects them and their enjoyment of the product.
Well, I think the fear really, you know, It's mostly, you know, the issues that you spoke about, but I think it all boils down to, you know, you have 51% of this TKO Group holdings being held by, you know, Endeavor and Ari and, you know, the assets that belong to UFC and that whole business. And so, you know, there may come a point when people who you know, who don't really know the wrestling business all that well are in a position to have an inordinate effect on the on-screen product. And I would hope that, you know, whether it's Ari or his, you know, or the other executives are listening to the ideas of people who have a lot more familiarity with the product. And that comes with, you know, that's both on the wrestling side and the MMA side of the business, and not trying to, you know, force the bad ideas that people disconnected from the fan bases and the products through because somebody wants to prove their worth as a contributor to the company, so to speak. So it all really comes down to management style. You know, does this new leadership group trust the people who have the most familiarity with the product and know the fan base, or are they going to think that they have the right ideas and try to force things that may, you know, that may not be what wrestling fans are looking for or what MMA fans are looking for? And I hope that's not the case, but that's my biggest fear, that it's, you know, you're going to end up with, you know, like a Jim Herd WCW situation where they're going to be unhappy with the performance or the growth of either of these products long-term, and it's not turning the profits that the company was looking for. And so they promote some empty suit to run the WWE division of this new company. And they end up, you know, essentially meddling in something that they don't really understand. I think that's my biggest concern at this point.
Yes, yes. All right, this is a last call for anyone who wants to chime in on the choice WWE may or may not have for Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, The Rock or Cody. Do you like the idea of LA Knight being next up, and agree with what Jake and I said about maybe trying to get that, scratch that itch that fans have? I know I see Matt, Amy, Jay, Valentino, some other people, some other regulars on hold who haven't hit one yet. We haven't heard from our outside correspondent yet, so we might not actually stand there long enough to hear from Chris tonight. Maybe traffic's bad or something came up. Jake, in the meantime, I want to throw to you and have you tell people about your involvement with ProWrestling.net and how they can read and hear more from you.
Yeah, you can find me over at ProWrestling.net. I do the weekly SmackDown review or transcript on the website that you can read on Friday nights during the show. I also do the audio review exclusive for members for the SmackDown broadcast. I join Jason Powell weekly on the .net weekly audio show, which is our flagship show for members, and also for pay-per-view audio reviews for both AEW and WWE. And you can find out more about that and all the membership stuff over at pwmembership.net.
Very good. All right. I've cajoled Jay into pushing one and joining the show. Jay from Michigan, welcome. What's in your mind about SmackDown and our topic list today?
Hey, can you hear me, Wade?
Yeah, sure can.
Thanks for having me. I have to be honest, I just called and tuned in, so I haven't heard anything besides this conversation you guys have been having, but I did hear you drop my name as far as being on hold, so I figured I'd get off hold.
Yep.
My thoughts, because I'm assuming you guys are talking about the possibility of a Rock and Roman match at Mania.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't see how you don't do it, you know what I mean? If you got the Rock, there's no other match for him, and you would want the Rock. So, yeah, I don't see how you don't do that. I don't know what that means for Cody. I mean, I would assume that he's probably going to – they're going to have to shift him to maybe going after Seth Rollins, and you turn Rollins heel and, you know, go for that title. But I don't think you can't – I don't see how you don't do that match. You know, he was on – I know he was on the Pat McAfee show earlier today talking about how they had the match in place for WrestleMania 39, and they were going to do it, but they couldn't agree upon the story coming out of it. So, you know, he said he was 3 for 40. You know, I mean, I think this UFC TKO thing plays a huge role in what they want to do. And if you got a chance to get The Rock and The Rock wants to do it, that's the only thing that you're doing it.
Now, Jay, earlier Jake brought up, you know, The Rock's real particular about not wanting to lose a fight scene in a movie. And I brought up, you know, my experiences with Rock and how particular he is about his public image. And within WWE, there's life after Rock. There's life after WrestleMania. Things are going well. Cody is popular. You go, you know, what you're saying is sort of makes sense. Like, oh, if you can get Rock, do it. I get that as the initial take. And I bet, you know, most people in WWE would feel that way, that it would, you know, bring WrestleMania to a higher level than a Cody match in terms of mainstream perception. But what if Dwayne The Rock Johnson wants things done his way? And I'm not saying it's like an unfound, like it's out of proportion egomaniac on the run, but just he's got his way that he wants things done, and he thinks he's earned the right to decide what happens or veto things, including the storyline that makes the most sense to the people who are completely immersed every day of their lives in telling the Bloodline story, planning it out, discussing it, and thinking about, you know, what they're going to do with Cody, what they're going to do at WrestleMania, what they're going to do after WrestleMania. And what if The Rock's like, I'm not feeling it. You know, the old Hogan thing in WCW, I'm not feeling it. I don't want to do that. Let's go in and let's give him a Rock show. We'll do this and this and this and on the people's elbow. And then, you know, like, what if it just, like, if you were facing that, Jay, and you're Roman Reigns, Paul Levesque, Paul Heyman, everybody involved in this, do you just give in to whatever The Rock wants because it's The Rock? Or if that is the scenario, if it's Dwayne The Rock Johnson's out for himself and isn't all that interested in being part of WrestleMania unless he gets to kind of do things the way that he wants to do them for himself, do you still say yes to that? Do you still make it happen?
So now I have to answer that question by first asking a question because, again, I haven't really heard a lot of comments on that. Is that The Rock's thing? Because I haven't really heard historically that he's really hung up on the wins and losses aspect. However, I have heard recently, and I may have heard you make the case once or twice about this whole, he's very conscious and very particular about his image as it pertains to, you know, since he's been in the movie. So I don't know if it would come to that, but I feel like you're going to have a problem either way. And I'm going to say that because you don't have the Rock should not win this match. But again, you're having another WrestleMania that Roman Reigns does not lose the title. And now you've gotten Cody completely out of that picture, you know, and his moment is gone. So you can't possibly think that they're going to wait till WrestleMania 41 to have Cody lose, cause Roman Reigns in, because, like, now you're running the risk of, like, we don't know where Cody's going to be at that point. Like, my opinion is, Cody should be the guy. But, again, if you have The Rock, you got to go with The Rock. However, it has to be for Roman to win. But you're still going to run into the same problem as far as, like, what are we doing post-Mania if you have Roman win again. So I guess that's my answer. Like, There's no real – the only real good answer is Cody Rhodes should win the title at WrestleMania 40.
So you would vote for Cody Roman over Rock Roman at WrestleMania 40, even though you started by saying if you can get Rock Roman, you got to do it. If Rock is – so, yeah, clarify your stance.
Okay, so let me clarify. If you can get The Rock, you have to do it. That's not my wrestling fan talking. That's my WWE smart fan talking. And that's my knowing that's what they would do if that were the case. My preference is, Cody versus Roman. Cody versus Roman, finish the story. But if The Rock is in the picture, I can say with pretty good confidence that is going to be Rock and Roman. So that's the clarification.
Jake, how do you feel about that? How far should WWE and Roman Reigns and Paul Levesque and Paul Heyman and everybody involved in the Bloodline storyline, how subservient should they be to the almighty Dwayne The Rock Johnson in 2024 if he is living up to his, matching his reputation of being very particular about, how he's used, and maybe that's in a way that doesn't, quote, give back or leave WWE stronger other than the business and eyeballs and attention that he draws from being part of the show.
Yeah, I don't think you sacrifice your long-term goals to accommodate The Rock if he's being unreasonable about the way that he is going to get used. You know, I think Wade, you alluded to what we were talking about earlier, where, you know, he famously had a conflict with Vin Diesel over the Fast and Furious films because he was contractually, arranging ways where he never lost a fight on film. And if you're, if you're essentially carrying that over into the pro wrestling scene, you know, if he doesn't want to do the job clean, or if he's asking for unreasonable accommodations to give him cover that makes Roman look weak or whatever the case may be, then I don't know that I would go out of my way to accommodate him, because you're already going to sell out two nights in Philadelphia. It's already a record house for them. You know, I know The Rock would probably put more eyes on the show on Peacock, but I mean, to be frank, that does not really give the company any more money than they would gain from whatever they're contractually obligated to get paid. And so, I mean, I think you do business with him if he's willing to be, you know, if he's willing to fit into the, you know, your plans. But I would not bend over backwards just to get, you know, an aging Rock who probably can't deliver you as good of a match as Cody would deliver on your WrestleMania card. That's just my personal take.
Yeah, no, I think you are probably on the page that WWE is when it comes to this. You know, Rock wants to do it, but I don't think he wants to do it in a way that would be necessary for everyone in WWE to agree to it for the reasons you said, not to mention ego and pride, that business is better now in so many ways than when Rock was on top. And, you know, I could imagine there being some people going, wait a second, have you looked around? Do you look at our quarterly statements? Do you understand, you know, that we're on Fox? Yes, drawing way fewer people on Raw and SmackDown than when Rock was on top, but it's a different TV landscape. But ticket buying public, how many people are watching WrestleMania, overall revenue, licensing deals, all of that. I mean, it's not like Rock can walk in and go, well, let me save this company that needs me. So anyway, Jay, it sounds like you're interested in chiming in. What would you like to add?
I am interested in chiming in. Who's the gentleman that's hosting with you tonight?
Jake Barnett.
Jake. Sorry I didn't catch your name, but I definitely know who you are, man. My question is this. When you say in a way that's beneficial to the business or makes Roman look strong or weak, like, first off, I think that we've made a lot of people on the roster. Well, let me say it like this. What is the definition of having Roman look strong when he's won so many matches without there being a clean finish, including last year's WrestleMania? So are we saying because it's The Rock and he hasn't wrestled in X amount of years, that he should be able to beat him cleanly? Or even if he doesn't beat him clean, and as long as he wins, like, what is really the negative impact on Roman Reigns? And furthermore, what is the, like, I guess you can say positive impact of, because I feel like he's going to win. And I don't even think, whatever Rock's reputation may be, I think that he would see the bigger picture, and especially with it being his family. So, you know, I think that he would put him over, and if it wouldn't really have to be a clean finish, because Roman doesn't win most of his matches clean. So I don't see there really being a issue there. I just think that, again, we're falling into the problem of what are you going to do after WrestleMania once Roman is a champion again?
Yeah, I wouldn't think that the holdup would be, you know, Reigns needs to beat Rock decisively and cleanly. I think the idea would be Rock has to blend into the story that's being told and not have it be Rock kind of going through the motions of the best, the greatest hits of Rock, and that they'd want him to really understand, integrate into the story with a certain number of dates and kind of basically being told what to say. Because he's probably not super up to date on, you know, the last few years of what's been going on with all the moving parts and characters. And I do think there's some people who are just kind of protective of Cody and, you know, keeping the people who are on full time in that spot. You know, I know CM Punk was like, oh, why is a part timer coming in and stealing main events? And I think there was a much better case to be made back then that Rock had more value as a 40-ish-year-old guy, not that far removed compared to today from being a full-time guy, but the business has moved on and gone to different places. Jake, what do you think, you know, the deal breaker would be from a Reigns, Levesque, Heyman standpoint with how Dwayne Johnson wanted to do things? Like, what do you think they would ask of him that he might be like, oh, I'm not feeling that. Like, where would the specifics be that would lead to maybe an impasse of Rock wanting to do it, which I've heard he wants to. It seems pretty clear today. He wants it. He wanted it, and he would still want it. Yet, it's not happening, and I don't think it's going to happen next year. Either, despite all this, unless Nick Khan flexes some muscles or something like that. What do you think the impasse would be, Jake?
I think it really depends on what accommodations he's asking for. I don't know what that is, and I don't know what they're asking him to do. But I guess if I was in WWE's shoes and I was negotiating with him, just knowing how he's very conscious of his public image, and he does not like to appear weakened or defeated, in any significant way on film. And I assume that would translate to a similar opinion about wrestling appearances. You know, he always likes to come out on top in some way. And so, you know, if what he's asking for in order to take a loss is to essentially leave the Bloodline visually looking so, you know, overpowered and defeated by him that, you know, they continue on, you know, into the months after WrestleMania, but they've lost and been diminished in a way that they, you know, whoever ends up beating Roman feels like they're not getting, you know, the full weight of that prize, then I would turn him down. You know, that would be my red line, you know, where I would not accommodate The Rock. I would want to make sure that if we're going to push aside Cody or whoever your alternate is for The Rock at WrestleMania in order to put him in there, then the victory that Roman attains over him has to be strong enough that when he eventually does lose to whoever the chosen person is that he's handing off that unified championship to, it has to feel like they've finally slayed the dragon and not, you know, a weakened one that The Rock actually defeated, except for he slipped on a banana peel at the end and lost anyway. You know, that would be where I'm coming from.
Yep, that makes sense. Jay, any closing words for us?
Yeah. I guess, man, ultimately, with where we're at currently, what really is a compelling story for Roman and The Rock to get into the ring outside of it just being like a name brand thing? Because I feel like it was way more compelling and set up for Roman and The Rock to face last year at Mania. But now it's like with this convolution of the Bloodline and, like, you know, I feel like we just getting into a state where it's just a Roman Rock legacy match, because I don't think the Bloodline story is at its peak anymore, and I don't really see where we're going if we do have that match. Like, you know, if the issue was the story last year, what is better about the story this year?
Yeah, good question, Jay. Thanks for calling up and chiming in. I've always thought, you know, the idea would be Rock would show up and go, oh, head of the table. That's what you're calling yourself. And, you know, Rock might imagine that would be what he'd do, but maybe Rock doesn't want to do that. Maybe Rock wants it to be, you know, legend versus legend and not be part of a Bloodline storyline. But my thinking is the idea would be Rock would come in and be involved with Jimmy and Jay and Solo and Heyman in talking about Roman. But there's the risk that Rock shows up and Roman looks secondary in the context of sharing screen time in a storyline with a Rock that WWE and Roman in particular are not interested in participating in. So if you don't take that approach, and the idea is, you know, treat them as equals, if Rock is a babyface and Roman's the heel, you still are going to have Roman sort of being the one who in theory is showing ass, especially if ultimately Roman sneaks out with a win but maybe with interference, if Rock is even willing to do that. I would hope he would be. But storyline wise, I mean, I think there's still a story to be told there of Rock, you know, influencing what's happening. I mean, you could see Roman and Jimmy against Rock and Jay as even a WrestleMania-worthy match, where you're not leaning on Rock for a singles match, but you have, you know, two sides of the bloodline going at it. But maybe you look at SummerSlam next summer for that instead, and then there is no Universal title, Undisputed title at stake, and it's you do Cody Roman also. And maybe that's something that everyone can be on the same page on. Jake, you can respond to what I said or just respond to Jay's final question.
Well, I think Jay's right in terms of, you know, the bloodline story being off of its peak. You know, it's certainly not where it was, 6 months ago. The issue with The Rock coming in now is that you do have to contrive a reason for him to be there and to have a conflict with Roman. And, you know, they've had a lot of allusions to, you know, to tribal elders and, you know, how they exert influence on the proceedings of things. You know, they arranged for that tribal combat match with Jay and Roman to resolve that issue, for instance. And so maybe that's the easiest way to get where they're going is, you know, Roman's out of control or he's losing control of the bloodline and they are trying to pull the thing back together. And that means calling in, you know, the biggest gun that they have, and that's The Rock. And so I think the story is still attainable and you could still make it fit into the logic of the things that have been taking place, you know, since SummerSlam. But they, you know, they have, you know, sort of convoluted the thing because, well, and I don't know why Roman's currently not around, if he's just on vacation or if he's nursing injury or whatever the case may be, you know, but his absence has caused them to go in a couple of different directions, and they'll have to pull that back together if they want to unite the bloodline again to tell one singular story heading into WrestleMania.
Yep, makes sense. All right, we'll go to Spencer in Joliet, Illinois next, and then Ashley in Orlando on deck. Spencer, welcome. What are your thoughts on our discussion tonight?
Hi, how you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Hi. I want to continue talking about the whole Rock situation, and I think that there's a way that WWE could have their cake and eat it too. I think that they could just say, you know what, if The Rock is down for it, they could just say Rock night one, Cody night two. Now, you could say that's predictable that Roman would win night one to face Cody in night two. But to me, in this case, predictability wouldn't be bad because Roman should beat The Rock anyway. So if you could have Roman pull double duty and you could have your Rock match night one main event, and then you could still do Cody night two main event, and then Cody could still have his coronation because now Roman just came off of beating The Rock, a legend, another legend under his belt, and so now Cody just beat Roman, the guy that just beat The Rock, who's beaten Cena, Brock, Goldberg. Basically, Roman's gone through all the legends anyway and beaten them. So why not just do him night one and then Cody night two? I could see WWE, because that's the way of them just, you know, having their cake and eating it too, having it both ways. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I mean, Seth Rollins might have something to say about it. Maybe the top women in the company would have something to say about Roman having the main event slot both nights. Although you could, you know, make a case you could open night one with Roman Rock and then close night two with Roman Cody or something like that. Jake, what do you think about Spencer's idea?
I don't even know what kind of number they'd need to write down on a piece of paper to make Roman work both nights at WrestleMania, but I imagine it would be pretty hefty. But I can't rule it out as being, you know, a decent compromise if they want to try to satisfy every aspect of the fan base, you know, the people who want to see The Rock, people who want to see Cody finish the story. I just don't know how likely that all is. You know, would Cody be willing to accept beating a weakened Roman Reigns who just had a main event type match the night before? I don't know. It's a good question if you could satisfy all parties involved by reaching that kind of compromise. It's an interesting idea though.
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, maybe part of Roman that's like, well, you know, the way he works, it's not taking a bunch of bumps and a bunch of dives, and he might be thinking, hey, working both nights of WrestleMania, two mega main events on one weekend, it would add to the resume of him as the GOAT, not John Cena, not Stone Cold, not Hulk Hogan, not Bruno Sammartino. You know, puts him more in Mount Rushmore territory of, yeah, I was in the two biggest matches of WrestleMania on one weekend. And the drop-off after both of my matches was pretty big in terms of what drove interest and viewership. So, yeah, I mean, you know, Spencer, I'm with Jake. I mean, I think it, you know, there's certainly some things that might work against it, and Roman might be like, you know, no, I don't want to work twice, and I don't. What, and the things, you know, that are at issue with, that might be at issue with Rock and Roman, or Rock and WWE, maybe more specifically in terms of the story, you know, that might still be present, but maybe that is the workaround. You also have the issue of Cody not getting to be the center of attention going into Mania because it's split. You know, Cody gets half the hype. Does he end up with less of a rub if he ultimately beats Roman, or does he get more because Rock brings more eyeballs? Spencer, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think he gets more because at the end of the day, he's the last thing people are going to see. He's the last thing people are going to see Sunday night at whatever time it ends. That's the end. You don't – so there is no – people had 24 hours to digest. You know, we saw The Rock. And like I said, The Rock should lose to Roman anyway. So there's nothing wrong with doing it night one and, you know, somebody, you know, thinking that, you know, this is predictable because if having that SummerSlam – next year or whenever, he should win. So I think Cody should think of it as at the end of WrestleMania, when WrestleMania is all said and done, I'm the one that's going to be holding the belt, the title, beat Roman Reigns after, you know, close to 4 years, 4 years now, he's finished the story. And to how you said, you know, maybe the women would have an issue or Seth Rollins would have an issue, we have to think about it. It's been 2 years, last year, the tag team main evented, and then the year before, the last quote-unquote match, the last thing we saw on night one was Stone Cold and Kevin Owens. And Stone Cold,
yeah,
the biggest star of all time, you know, Rock right up there, but the biggest star of all time, that was no issue. I didn't hear anybody saying, why is Stone Cold taking away a potential, you know, women's main event or something else. You know, the biggest star, it was Kevin Owens did a great job, and everybody was happy after night one of WrestleMania. So I think, conversely, this could be that same way. The Rock isn't going over. The Rock isn't winning the title. You know, you could just still do the – it can be the whole – family, and I think The Rock would, you know, do the right thing. I think The Rock has no problem losing to Roman Reigns in the middle of the ring. That's his family. He's been in the business his whole life. You know, I get the whole thing with the acting, but I think when it comes to this, The Rock knows that, you know what, it's no problem losing in the center of the ring. He's done it plenty of times before. I mean, the man lost to the Hurricane on an episode of Monday Night Raw when he was already like the biggest star. So I think that in the end it'll be fine, and I don't think The Rock would try to pull some ego trip or say, you know, I'm bigger than this, so I could, you know, do this. So I don't think that would happen. Me personally, that's my opinion on the whole on the whole matter.
Well put, Spencer. Thank you. Appreciate you calling.
Yes, no problem. You guys have a good night.
Yeah, you too. Enjoy the weekend. Jake, anything you want to add to what Spencer just added to the conversation?
No, I think there's a lot of unknowns there. I mean, he brought up a lot of plausible points. So I guess we're all just going to have to wait and see at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's go to Ashley in Orlando next. Ashley, welcome to the conversation. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys, thank you so much for having me. I know it's late, so I'll try to keep it brief. And not to keep beating the same Rock, Roman, Horn that everyone's beating tonight. But and again, if you brought this up towards the beginning, I apologize. But real quick, my idea, maybe kind of a different route that may check all the boxes. Because my idea, kind of taking it back to SummerSlam when Jimmy returned and cost Jay the match with Roman, was that we would lead to a fatal, well, not fatal four, but a four-way match at Survivor Series between the Bloodline, and then that would break off to the Rumble with possibly Jimmy costing Jay or Jay costing Jimmy, you know, or eliminating each other at the Rumble to set up their one-on-one match at Mania. So that kind of takes care of them. You still have Solo with Roman, of course. But maybe, and I don't know how sacrilegious this may be or how maybe veering off of the story for Cody this may be, but cause to me, my understanding of the whole finish the story part with Cody was he just needs to win that title, right? So does it necessarily have to be at WrestleMania? Possibly, now this may be, again, crazy, maybe we have Cody versus Roman at the Rumble to for their rematch. Obviously, it's not going to be at Mania in my little scenario, but with the whole draft to, or who's going to be moving over to SmackDown, that could answer that question with Cody moving over to SmackDown to kind of speed this up. That takes care of Cody getting his rematch. And again, I know it's not ideal with it not being at Mania, but at least Cody has this feel-good moment that sets up his match possibly against LA Knight at one of the nights, maybe on night one for WrestleMania. So then you have Roman not going in as a champion to face The Rock, so there's no issue there with Rock even needing to mention the title at all at that point, or he can just reference the historic reign that Roman has been on, because Roman's already checked his boxes off too, right? He's already hit his 1,000-day mark, the 3-year mark, so I don't know any other monumental milestone that's coming up anytime soon in that regard. And then, yeah, and then it frees Seth up as well to keep possibly, or whoever he's going to go defend his title against at WrestleMania as well. So to me, that could be a possibility. Again, I know the main, like, storybook ending for Cody would be to win it at Mania. But, going into Mania, defending the World Heavyweight Championship that you wanted, that was your whole storyline, right? And the championship that your father never had and all that. I think that's a pretty good – I mean, yes, it's not winning, and I was in the camp that I wanted him to win at Mania this past year, and I still think he probably should have. But, yeah, what do you guys think about that?
And who would Cody's opponent be at Mania then?
Possibly like an LA Knight, since they'll both be on SmackDown, and if LA Knight stays on his path, he can have a good showing at the Rumble, possibly win the Rumble, since Cody would be in his one-on-one match with Roman at that point. So that could be a good showing for – LA Knight, maybe have him enter in like the early numbers, maybe not number one, but possibly before 10, so he has a good showing, you know, puts forth that effort, kind of like Gunther did last year. So, yeah, just some thoughts there.
You could do Solo, too, if they really want to get behind Solo and give him a big match, you know, against a big name like Cody in the title match at Mania, and he's going to be more full-time. Roman pulling back from, you know, anything close to a full-time schedule. Maybe that works in a heel-face matchup, too. Jake, what do you think about Ashley's suggestion here, that scenario? Give Cody the title at the Rumble, that, you know, if he moves over to SmackDown sooner, then it eliminates him needing to win the Rumble. The Rumble winner can be Solo, or the Rumble winner could be the person who faces Seth, and maybe Seth opens up night one of WrestleMania and kicks things off. A lot of different ways that could go, but her scenario does work also in addition to the idea of back-to-back matches on two nights for Roman.
Yeah, I think it could work if you could get The Rock to buy in to having a non-title match and having somebody already have beaten Roman, you know, to come in and still have the match at WrestleMania. I think that would be your biggest hurdle at that point. It was like I think a big selling point to The Rock would be, this guy's been the champion for 4 years, and this family story has been essentially the overarching story of WWE during that time period, and to have that story essentially wind down, I guess you'd probably have to do a lot of smoothing over about what's at stake in order to have him come in and do it. But if you could, I think it certainly checks all the boxes. You know, you could have, if you have Cody win at the Rumble, then, he could face Solo, as you said, or Rollins or Gunther or LA Knight or anybody they had pegged for that spot,
Gunther
at WrestleMania.
Gunther could win the Rumble, and the whole thing is he going after Cody or Seth, and that turns into a big announcement.
Right, and so there's plenty of angles there you could work it out. I just think it's, you know, how do you talk The Rock into this idea, and, you know, is he still willing to come in if the fight is essentially just over the mantle of tribal chief instead of, you know, having all of the grandiosity of the long title reign and Roman being unbeaten if all that is essentially off the table at that point.
Although that does free up Rock to win, but not win the title when some, you know, there's some shenanigans that backfire on Roman. So there's that option, but you could also do Rock and Jay against Roman and Jimmy, or Roman and Solo, and make it a tag match and get almost everybody involved in some way in that match too, and it turns into a special tag match. So there's various variations that I think could work. And so if you ended up with Cody against Solo, Roman and Jimmy against Rock and Jay, Seth against Gunther, I mean, you're stacking up a pretty good top half of the men's side of a WrestleMania lineup with that mix. So, you know, and yeah, there's some, you know, little variations here and there that you could do, but that's one scenario. Ashley, back to you for any follow-up.
Yeah, just my closing thoughts, and then I guess I'll let you guys go. My thought was how The Rock could kind of flip it on The Rock if you're WWE trying to pitch it to him, would be if you go with my little scenario with Cody winning the title at the Rumble, you know, Roman could be just livid once the shock and the devastation and, like, the agony of defeat sets in. He could just spaz on Solo and just start, like, just beating the crap out of him and possibly Paul, if you want. Although I don't know why The Rock would care about Paul. But then you can have The Rock make a surprise, I don't know if return, but a surprise, I guess return at that point, depending on how long he stays right now, a surprise return and have him come out and confront Roman and just kind of give like a stare off, and then that kind of sets the idea and the thought of him versus Roman at Mania. And to even explain why Rock would have been there to begin with, how would he have known that Roman was going to flip out on the family, right? You can say Rock was going to be there possibly just as a celebratory thing. You know, he expected Roman to complete mantle the story again for Cody and kind of go off of that trail, and then he would, you know, whatever reason, you can kind of just put it that way. The Rock was expecting Roman to win, and then once he saw that what he completely flipped and spazzed out, then that's what brought him out there to kind of save the family and then kind of go from there and to kind of put Rock in like the saving grace and like in the hero role in that route. But like I said, it was just a thought that I had leaving work. But thank you guys. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you, Ashley. That's a good contribution. Jake, any follow-up on her last point?
No, I think they're good thoughts. You know, it really just boils down to, you know, what can you talk The Rock into? Like, how far is he willing to go to play ball, and how far are they willing to go to try to make it work? And I don't know where either side stands at this point, and so it's really just a lot of speculative thinking.
And in addition to that, it's also how much does Nick Khan want it, or how much power does Nick Khan have in this new scenario if he's tight with The Rock and sort of is maybe, you know, not in a back channel way, because Nick Khan doesn't have the back channel, but in a way where he creates, you know, he and Rock are kind of creating their own narrative outside the bounds of television that then leads fans to start imagining and wanting to see that. And does that compete with Cody? And then how does that all work out? I mean, it could lead to, you know, political turmoil. It might lead to great ideas and a bigger WrestleMania than ever. I mean, there's a whole range of possibilities here with the limited information we have and how quickly this all came together. But I would say our you know, kind of spitballing here with callers has led to a variety of scenarios that seem, at least in a, you know, detached, I don't say detached from reality, but separating ourselves from maybe the politics and the particulars of the personalities, on paper seems like they would be very fan-pleasing options with where it seems like everybody would win, or at least nobody would lose badly enough to with veto power to say no way and ruin it. But I don't know. My hunch is Rock's not on WrestleMania next year, but I'm certainly, if he is, it makes WrestleMania bigger if they take some of the approaches that I think we've run down, where it doesn't come at the expense of other things, whether that's Gunther or Solo or the Usos, and especially Cody. But I think there's ways to make everybody happy, including the fans. We'll see. Stay tuned. I'm sure we'll talk more about this in coming days, weeks, and months. Jake, is there anything else from SmackDown you want to bring up before we sign off?
I think we covered just about everything. I guess just on your last point there, it would definitely make WrestleMania bigger if The Rock is able to participate. But I think if you're WWE, you have to really answer the question is, will it make WrestleMania better? And will it serve your long-term goals 6 or 9 months down the road from WrestleMania? And I can't answer that because I don't know exactly what their plans are, but they have a lot to think about and figure out financially. And maybe some of this new management will have something to say about it as time goes on too.
And then how important is a bigger number on Peacock at that point, if there's no more money being made? If it's an outlier pop in viewership for a WrestleMania, but it doesn't lead to, any sort of sustained boom in business, you better make sure that it's not undercutting what you want to do for the next 3, 6, 9 months in WWE, because this isn't about trying to draw an extra 500,000 buys in the pre-network era. This isn't about getting an extra 200,000 network subscribers where they might stick around and it perpetually you're benefiting from it. It really is, because of the way the business is set up, puts WWE in a position to kind of go, well, what are you going to do for us, Rock, that is going to actually help the metrics that we're focused on right now? And there's less of that. There's less for Rock to contribute. I mean, you might sell extra T-shirts. Maybe the secondary ticket market goes up. It's not like a real big difference maker in a quarterly revenue statement based on how things are set up at this point. Cool. Jake, thank you so much. Always a pleasure having you on.
Thanks, Wade. Take care.
Yep. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you tomorrow night after Collision. Chris Maitland joining me to analyze AEW's Saturday Night Show.